Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of Legion of News is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric. High atop the Milkpacking District in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, bearing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
Portland passes yet another school levy measure. Newt Gingrich is covered in glitter. And Starbucks is sued for firing a dwarf.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, pay heed for this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon. I'm Don Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Wednesday, May 18th, 2011. Portland voters easily approved a Portland Public Schools District levy yesterday, and a bond measure appeared headed for defeat, with the Oregonian calling the outcome a certain loss. The levy, which district officials said would save 200 positions in the school district, passed with a 58% yes. The $548 million bond measure was much closer, roughly 51-49% this morning. Multnomah County Elections Director Tim Scott said turnout was not that bad for a special district election, but he noted the turnout so far is below the 2003 special district election in which Multnomah County residents voted on a special I-tax. Turnout for that vote was close to 66%. On Tuesday, turnout was hovering around 30%. Meanwhile, voters in Clackamas County easily rejected a $5 tax for vehicle registration that would have helped pay for replacement of the Saltwood Bridge. So, to recap, Multnomah County, yay, we want to spend another $400 a year on our schools. Clackamas County, no, we're not going to give you $5 for a bridge.
I'd rather have a bridge that worked, but I mean, that's just me.
Yeah.
You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is Wednesday, May 18th, 2011. Thank you for joining us on this midweek day. Coming up later on this hour, we get your entertainment news, also Science of the March. If you want to get this program later on the day via iTunes, by God, you can do so. You can also get it as a direct MP3 download here at Cascadia.fm or at legionofnews.com. And about 1 hour from now at rickemersonshow.com, the Rick Emerson Cavalcade of Whimsy will plague and or bless your ear holes, depending on how you look at it. Today we'll be talking to Mr. Aaron Mesh from Willamette Week. That is at rickemersonshow.com. Here is Don Taylor.
Former Speaker of the House and newly minted GOP presidential candidate Newt Gingrich was showered with glittery confetti by a gay rights activist at a book signing in Minneapolis yesterday. Feel the rainbow, Newt, the protester said as he yanked out a box and dumped the sparkles on Gingrich. Stop the hate. Stop anti-gay politics. It's dividing our country and it's not fixing our economy. The man who was escorted out of the room was later identified as Nick Espinoza, 24. The Minneapolis resident garnered national attention last year when he dumped 2,000 pennies in the lap of Minnesota Republican gubernatorial candidate Tom Emmer.
Was he talking about how he has Stardar?
No.
Okay.
No.
Just checking.
But apparently this fella in Minnesota had come under fire for suggesting that waiters made more than $100,000 a year. So Espinoza dumped 2,000 pennies in his lap for some reason.
Okay.
And so now he's dumping glitter on Newt Gingrich. It wasn't nearly as interesting as I thought it was going to be.
No, I think that's more of a visual story. I think perhaps just just the straight aural depiction of that probably doesn't really didn't really convey the dramatic punch that you were hoping. But that's okay.
You had to be there, yes, is what you're saying.
I suppose. And also, you know, yeah.
New research published in today's Journal of the American Medical Association shows close to a third of emergency rooms have closed over the last two decades. Sandra Schneider, head of the American College of Emergency Physicians, says it's interesting to note that most of the closures were located in poor neighborhoods.
That is interesting.
That
These
is.
People already have difficulty getting seen, getting their health care needs seen, so now they don't even have emergency departments to fall back on.
Well, it's kind of unusual, isn't it, that poor people get less services than rich people?
It really is. This is the sort of thing that we need news broadcasts for, so they can make us aware of these sort of phenomena, because otherwise you'd never know that these conditions exist, Don.
Someone should look into this.
Yeah.
Schneider says the U.S. needs to take a long, hard look at how Schneider says the U.S. needs to take a long, hard look at how health care is financed.
We are in a crisis. Emergency care is having problems surviving, particularly in low-income communities. And hospitals are closing down because they financially are not viable.
So let me understand this. So if you are located in a poor inner-city part of the country, you may in fact get the fuzzy end of the lollipop. Mm.
And apparently there are problems with the healthcare system that make it difficult for people to get affordable care.
I'm glad that you brought that news to the people, because otherwise I would have been totally ignorant of that. I don't think anybody would have had access to that information in any way, shape, manner, function, or form.
Well, you can thank Sandra Schneider, head of the American College of Emergency Physicians.
Thank you, Sandra Schneider.
Bringing that to our attention.
Okay.
A martial arts instructor in Newburgh was arrested Monday on accusations of sex abuse. Joshua Lee Pillay of Lafayette, Oregon, was charged with three counts of first-degree sexual abuse and one count of first-degree sodomy. The case involves a 7-year-old who reported she was sexually abused in 2008.
Is it just being born in a place called Lafayette that makes your parents name you Johnny Lee? Does it just come with the city? I mean, is it when you go to the hospital, you just have, like, there's only so many names to choose from?
Oh, and then they say, "I'm sorry, ma'am, you didn't give your child the middle name of Lee."
I'm sorry, your first name isn't two syllables ending with a Y sound. You go back and try it again, Brandy.
Police fear there may be two victims because of his connection teaching martial arts to children.
Sorry.
The cool wet spring that we've had has delayed the crop of Hood variety strawberries, so consumers aren't going to see them at farmers markets until mid-June. The strawberries are always a treat, Rick Emerson. But sunny and warm days the first 2 weeks of June are needed to produce high sugar and the sweetest berries possible. So our sweetest variety of strawberries, typically ready to enjoy by June 1st, yet they're arriving later than usual. They arrived 2 to 3 weeks later than usual last year, too.
Did you single me out as a listener to that story because you felt that it had some personal relevance to me? It was going to impact my life in some way?
I think I thought maybe the story would be more interesting if I was telling it directly to a specific person.
An actual strawberry consumer.
Right.
How do you feel that worked out?
Not very well. Matt Unger of Unger Farms near Cornelia said late crops typically also lead to a shortened harvest season. He said the short season does not necessarily impact the flavor of the fruit, but would mean fewer days for farmers to sell.
Are you just reading pages out of the old farmer's almanac now?
The people want to know about the strawberry crop.
Maybe if somebody threw glitter on the strawberries, it'd be more interesting. Tell me about lunar cycles.
I love the strawberry season.
Tell me about nitrogen levels in the soil, Don.
Tomorrow, your update on Hermiston watermelons.
Okay. Is it true that at the farmer's market on whatever, Belmont or Division or some damn street around here, that they have just they just have baby chickens just wandering around? Or, you know, like in a thing?
I don't know. Now I want to go there if that's true.
I don't know. Somebody was saying that on the Inertron summit. Mm. They were saying if you go there, I mean, they're not just sort of roaming free like hippies, but I mean, it's like, there's like a
they
little...
They sell chicks.
But there's sort of a pen thing, yeah, and you can just go by and look at them and then...
Can you buy them?
And imagine what they'll taste like someday when they're larger and succulent. Yes, I don't think they're there just for decorative purposes. I think you can...
Huh.
I think, like, if you want to be some... I don't know, if you want to be some dirt-covered, you know, whole earth catalog type and you want to have chickens running around your place, they don't just come out of there isn't like a chicken tree that you get them off of. I think you have to go get them from somewhere. And it's not like kombucha where you can just break a piece off of somebody else's chicken and grow it.
I'm surprised your wife has not brought home chickens or goats.
She tried
at this point.
No, she tried at one point. I told her, and again, as we've established, it's not like I'm a guy who really, I don't really put my foot down. But what I will do is I encourage her whenever she gets into one of these hippie jags, you know, these sort of sprees of back to naturism, which are just, you know, which is just fundamentally absurd. So what I'll do is I'll say that's a great idea. What you should do is you should actually just try that out for a couple of weeks to see exactly how you'd like to proceed with it. And then what she learns is that having chickens is a thing that's interesting when you're going to visit some of your, you know, grubby-faced friends in Eugene. But when it's a thing that, like, you actually have to do, it's like having a kid. It becomes a lot less interesting once you can't just toss it by the side of the road when you're done with it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You know, you have that those fantasies about, like, what you'll do later when you're a little older and you retire or something, and you talk about things like that with your spouse. I mean, maybe you don't, but folks do. Patrick and I have talked
What do you mean, maybe I don't? What are you trying to say about me and my spouse?
I don't know. Maybe Laura tries to have this conversation, and you just go, I'm always going to be a talk show. That's it. I'm always going to be a talk host. That's all we're ever going to do. I am not moving to the country and opening a B&B. I kind of assume that's how those.
Well, I won't be opening a B&B somewhere, but I have no doubt that there will be a time in the future when I move far, far away from all of you.
But Patrick and I have talked about the idea of having having goats, and making cheese.
You can buy cheese, though, is the thing.
I know, but there's something really. I think there's something very cool about having one of those little operations where you have the goats and you make your own artisan cheese.
Is this cheese that you'll be selling to other people?
Yes.
Okay.
You can only eat so much cheese.
Well, that's what I was saying. I mean, it seems like unless you're really anticipating a massive cheese shortage in the country, yeah. Which doesn't seem like it's in the offing.
No, it would be for, you know, selling to other people.
Okay.
But then I figured that probably won't happen because it's a whole lot of work.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, new research published in today's Journal of... We already read that one, and it was printed twice, and so I'm putting it down now. It was in two different fonts on two different pieces of paper.
I'll just sit over here.
Defense attorneys for Dominic Strauss-Kahn seem to be suggesting that the head of the International Monetary Fund had consensual sex with the hotel maid who claims he tried to rape her. Criminal defense attorney Paul Callan says Strauss-Kahn's attorneys are presenting a timeline following the incident that they hope will show he was not acting like a guilty man.
He had dinner with or lunch with his daughter. He called for his cell phone when he went to the airport, revealing his location. Doesn't sound like a guy who raped somebody.
What does a guy who raped somebody sound like?
I guess you don't have lunch after that.
Well, you have a light tea and some toast.
Yeah.
I want to know exactly what it sounds like if you are that guy. I mean, what is it?
What do you do differently?
I don't know. I mean, you know, other than you know, saying, and I'll kill that puppy if you tell anyone.
No, well, he wasn't lurking, so therefore he must not be guilty.
Yeah. Were they expecting him to be, like, digging a hole and just sort of sitting out back in a pit somewhere, just like Running Man style, or...
Callan says it would be difficult to convince a jury of that.
Seems like getting on a plane is exactly what you would do if you were that guy.
Yeah.
You would have to believe that a 63-year-old man comes out of a bathroom naked, and all of a sudden a 33-year-old maid is overcome with lust and has consensual sex with him?
Well, let's be fair... It's not like the guy who's the head of the International Monetary Fund has lacks appeal to women. Let's be really clear on that fact right now. The idea that he is 66 and she is 33, and also he's like a skillionaire, none of those things are mutually exclusive to the other. I think it's I think that is an incidental fact. Although, to be fair, I did actually read there was a story yesterday where he apparently, like last year, was saying that he lived in fear that somebody was going to pay somebody, that somebody was going to pay somebody else a large amount of money to make a criminal allegation against him, because that had been done to people that he knew. And so he said that, you just know that one of these days they're going to get some nutcase to make some criminal claim against me for like $1 million. So.
Although, isn't that exactly the sort of thing you would say if you were crafty? And you tended to be kind of rapey with hotel maids?
If you were Catherine Tramell.
Exactly.
Yes, Don, you've seen right through his cunning, basic instinct-based plan.
Also, he doesn't wear underpants.
It's the Esther Haas defense, Don.
The Equal Employment Opportunity Commission is suing Starbucks for firing a dwarf who asked for a stool to perform her job as a barista at an El Paso shop. The EEOC statement said the lawsuit was filed Monday in federal court in El Paso. It alleges that Starbucks fired Elsa Sallard after 3 days of training because it deemed she'd pose a danger to customers and coworkers. The EEOC contends Starbucks' actions violated the Americans with Disabilities Act. The agency also seeks lost wages and compensation.
Wait a minute. Are they saying that being a dwarf is a disability?
Yes.
That's interesting. I wonder how dwarves feel about that.
And apparently Starbucks is saying that it's dangerous.
Well, to do what? What was she doing? The dwarf, was it he or she?
It was a she.
Okay, so she wanted the stool to do what?
She was training to be a barista, and she needed a stool so she could, reach the counter better.
Well, that does seem dangerous. That's not a thing you would let... In other words, if somebody was trying to hold 180-degree water at the top of a ladder, you'd call it dangerous.
Yeah.
If you're a dwarf, a stool is a ladder. You can write that down, everybody. Put that on Twitter right now, a little bit of wisdom. If you're a dwarf, a stool is a ladder.
I would think, though,
if a frog had side pockets, he'd carry a handgun. Yes?
It just seems to me, though, that also... If you would have already figured out ahead of time that the person could not, do the things that were necessary to do the job.
Well, it sounds like maybe they figured it out and the dwarf was late getting the memo. Write that down. The dwarf was late getting the memo. It's like the fat man has landed.
But perhaps she could do the job just fine if she had just a little step stool so she could reach the counter a little bit.
Yeah, but you can't be having people hold it. But coffee is what they call very, very hot.
Well, then Starbucks should have thought of that before they hired her and then during training fired her.
Because that's what really works. They say, we're not going to hire you because you're too short. Next.
You don't say why you're not hiring. So you just say, well, it's like when you apply for a job and it says, are you able to carry 50 pounds of weight?
You just say you don't have any, we don't have any openings that fit your current skill set.
Yeah.
That's what you say.
I'm sorry, you're not tall enough to reach the counter.
All right. Well, I would imagine that there's some sort of a lawsuit either lurking in the background or that it has been threatened in the past, which resulted in them hiring the dwarf to begin with. And maybe they just figured, you're a dwarf, of course you're not going to be balancing a latte, at the top of a rickety piece of wood, because that's dumb. Maybe they sort of figured that a self-preservation gene would keep the dwarf from doing that.
That she would just walk around and just put it up over her head.
Well, there are other things that need to be done at Starbucks, right? I mean,
yeah.
it's not just all about serving scalding cups of liquid to people.
Yeah, but everything's up at counter level for normal people. I mean, she'd have to get up there somehow.
I don't know. Isn't there a back room she can be doing things in?
And then they just make a special low little table for
Can't
her.
Can't she be sorting or filing or folding or stacking or spindling?
I've worked at Starbucks. It's really mostly making coffee and handing people scones.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd say, well, maybe...
You kind of got to be up there.
Stick with the scones, maybe, and those you can throw. You don't even need a stool for those.
Her entire job could just be to get the coffee cakes off the bottom shelf. And
I'm just saying, that seems to be one of those things that OSHA would have a problem with. I mean, you may satisfy the ADA, but then it's like the safety commission is going to be coming in, and they're going to then you're going to be in trouble with a whole different group of people. And let's be honest, if you were going to be in trouble with a group of people, are you going to be in trouble with people that can come all the way up to your face or people where they stop at shin level,
Yeah, that's true.
I think,
Yeah, really, the worst thing that's going to happen is you can get punched in the junk.
It's like parking in a handicapped space. I mean, the people who need those are going to bitch about it, but what are they really going to do? It's not like they can even catch you. So, I'm just saying from a practical point of view, we're not going to hire any dwarves here at the Emerson News Network.
Apparently not.
No.
Although I wish we would.
Well, we will hire you for amusement purposes.
Oh, how many people have we made angry so far this morning?
I don't know. Two, three.
A man was captured on closed-circuit television trying to board a train in Wales with a pony. The unknown man attempted to buy two tickets.
What do you mean he was boarding a train of Wales with a pony?
A train in Wales.
Oh, okay. All right.
The country of Wales.
I thought it was a train of Wales was a school of fish or a murder of crows.
And they said no ponies here. This is the whale train, they said. No, it was in the country of Wales. The unknown man was attempting to buy two tickets, one for him and one for his pony, at the train station in North Wales for a two-hour journey to Holyhead, the North Wales Post reported today. Shocked staff refused to serve the man, telling him horses were not allowed on the train. Undeterred, the man said, "I know the law," and got into an elevator with the pony and walked it across the bridge and onto a platform.
Well, the stairs would kill him.
When the train arrived, he boarded the service and tried to pull the pony on with him until a conductor intervened. After a brief argument, the man retreated and left the station with his pony. A spokeswoman for Arriva Trains Wales said the company did not allow livestock to board trains. She said, we do allow small animals, such as dogs and guide dogs, aboard, but not large animals that could pose a risk to
the public. What's the name of the company?
Arriva.
Okay.
Arriva Trains Wales.
So this is a Wales train run by Mexicans holding ponies.
Right.
Okay, just checking. Is it the same? Is that the word I'm thinking of?
Welsh. A Welsh train.
What is the name of the name of the company?
Arriva.
Isn't that Arriva?
Yeah. That's what you're thinking of.
That's the only way that it can be said out loud.
Although that word is Arriva.
Okay, so it's not that word. No. It's not the Spanish word.
No, but
somebody's
it's very close.
Noted that Whale Pony should be Dave Grohl's new band. Well done. Also, hey, did I tell you this? That somebody registered Rick Emerson and showpony.com?
No, I didn't.
Yes. So when we launch our exciting morning show, all we need is a logo now.
Okay. I have to be Show Pony now, don't I?
Well, I'm already Rick Emerson, so I'm afraid there's only one other job available, Dwarf. So it's just going to have to take what's out there.
Patrick said that to me once. Patrick, being 6'2", we were doing something one day, and he said something like, you know, and this guy was practically a midget, like you.
Well.
And I was going, I'm 5'5".
You guys are kind of a lowercase b when you're standing together,
yeah.
So.
The Spartanburg, Tennessee, South Carolina, is it South Carolina? Or are we North Carolina? Where is Spartanville?
We're in Portland.
Spartanville is in South Carolina. The Spartanville County Council refused to sign a proclamation to designate June 4th as Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, and Transgender Day in Spartanburg County. Council Chairman Jeff Horton said he was asked by the group Upstate Pride SC, so it is South Carolina, to make June 4th LGBT Day in the county, and Horton said no. The group will have a march and a festival that day at Barnett Park in the city of Spartanburg, whose mayor did sign a proclamation for the group. But when the group emailed Horton, the council chairman, the county chairman asked for a similar proclamation, and Horton wrote back a one-word response just saying, no.
Well, there's something to be said for clarity,
yeah.
For efficiency of purpose.
P.K. Weiss, the heterosexual mother of four and former president of Upstate Pride South Carolina, although why it matters that she's heterosexual and a mother of four is beyond me, she said...
Well, to show that, you know, to show that normal, decent people are also for the gays.
That's right. She's... P.K. Weiss, no pervert she.
That's what I'm saying. She's not a sodomite.
She said, there was no salutation, no closing, no thank you for the invitation, just no. And I thought that was rude and dismissive.
But at least you can't accuse him of using political double talk. You know, we're sort of masking it all in prevarication. Just a big stamp, just no.
Horton said that he didn't consult the rest of the council about the request because he said he has a good pulse on what they feel, and no one, he said, would have supported it. Horton said his council is too busy with ironing out the county's budget and has no time for proclamations such as this. The council routinely issues proclamations which are really nothing more than an acknowledgement of a person, group, or issue. But in this case, he said, no. Iran is once again delaying the trial of two American hikers accused of espionage. After it was initially postponed in February, Josh Fatale and Shane Bauer were supposed to go on trial yesterday, but their lawyer and Swiss diplomat said they were not brought from the prison to the courthouse, which forced a second delay. Josh Fatale's mother, Laura Fatale, says the two have been detained for nearly 2 years.
If they entered illegally into Iran, they have more than served their sentence. And so all charges we feel are ridiculous and absurd.
Why would you enter Iran illegally? I mean, this is a country that I think even legally most of us would probably opt not to visit. Like, if it was on the way to somewhere else, we'd just stay in the car. We'd like, you know, we're just going to let it, we're going to sit here and listen to the radio. You just let us know when you're done.
Well, these
Iran.
Are those boneheads that just decided they would go backpacking through
around
Iran
the world.
Afghanistan or whatever. Fidel's mother says even if the two did what they're accused of, they've served their time.
The one-year detention, which is the sentence for illegal entry into a country, has already been more than served. Josh and Shane are in jail for 21 months.
Is that like a flat fee fine that you pay anywhere in the world if you illegally enter the country?
I'm sorry, it was 21 months. That's it.
Sort
you're
of
done.
Simplicity of transaction. Just no matter what country you're breaking into, it's like you just serve a year and then you're good to go.
Yeah. At least according to this guy's mom.
Yeah. When the sign up ahead says Iran, just take a little bit of a dog leg and just go. Just skirt the border a little bit and go somewhere slightly less. Oh, excitement is overrated. I would say in some. In some respects. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It's Wednesday, May 18th, 2011. Of course, you can also get this program later on the day via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here or at legionofnews.com. Cutting up next hour at the Rick Emerson radio program, it is, it's Wednesday. We've got Cannibal Watch, Clergy Watch, Corpse Watch, also Aaron Mesh from Willamette Week going to be joining us as well, where you can be entertained and amused for the low, low cost of just 32 cents a day. And is coming up next hour at rickemersonshow.com.
Let's do our science.
Let's see. Here is your science on the march for, there we go, for Wednesday, right here at the Legion of News, Cascadia.fm, brought to you by Squires Electric at squireselectric.com or facebook.com/squireselectric. You can also call them. It's 503-252-1609. That's 503-252-1609. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, contractors, and supervisors. If it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business, they can make your life easier. They are Squires Electric. Find out more by going to facebook.com/SquiresElectric. Here's Don Taylor.
I'm going to, rather than read you this piece from PCWorld.com, I'm instead going to read you the summation of this news piece by our friend Seamus,
right,
who boils it down beautifully. Less than a day after Sony's PSN was brought back online, with the exception of the PSN store, they've shut down some of their services again. This after it was discovered and then reported to Sony that they have failed to address a giant gaping security hole that would allow anyone to steal anyone's account with nothing more than their email address and date of birth. Using these two pieces of information would allow you to reset a user's password to anything you want via Sony's PSN website. Best of all, those are two pieces of information out of many that were taken in the initial security breach that occurred on April 16th and was discovered by Sony on April 19th. Seamus continues, of course, you wouldn't even need the stolen database to figure that out. If you knew someone's email address, you could just go on Facebook and search for them by email address and look at their Facebook page, where most people put their date of birth for everyone to see, then go submit both to Sony's website, change their password, locking them out of their own account, and then log in again as them.
Okay.
And then Seamus finishes by saying, well done, Sony.
So they're really going all out to secure things now, just to make sure that there's no...
Yes.
There's no backdoor, there's no entryway, there's no porous barrier at all.
No.
Between thieves and your information.
This doesn't even count as a backdoor.
No.
This is just like, oh yeah, just go do this and ta-da, it's a... Yeah.
All right.
Death, according to Stephen Hawking, the world-famous British physicist, is even more of a drag than we thought. He says there's no pearly gates, no rebirth, no playing harps on cloud tops. The stories of stuff that happens after death are just that. They are fairy tales, he told the UK's Guardian in a recent interview.
He's a real buzzkill most of the time.
In the new interview, Hawking drove home his point, saying, I regard the brain as a computer which will stop working when its components fail. There is no heaven or afterlife for broken-down computers. That is a fairy story for people afraid of the dark. Naturally, the statement
is... How do you know that he really thinks any of those things? You know, for all you know, that nurse could be behind him with a speak-and-spell, just like wiring crap into that voice box of his.
And his eyes
what
are darting back and forth.
No,
then,
I
like,
don't.
I didn't say that.
Crap, and he's blinking out the words like torture. You know, so seems to me that we really have no way of knowing whether Stephen Hawking is actually alive. He could be a creature shop invention for all we know.
That's true.
Frank Oz could just be behind him the entire time, just manipulating everything, you know, black holes. I demand proof that Stephen Hawking is actually real.
Okay.
Naturally,
the statement has caused another stir, angering people who think Hawking shouldn't be meddling with religious ideas. Stephen Green, director of lobby group Christian Voice, told the Cambridge News that the comparisons to a computer switching off shows a man who is only able to think of things in a materialistic way. For starters, Hawking says he is not afraid to die, for example, having lived with...
Have you taken a good long look at Stephen Hawking? Really, the karmic wheel could not land on a worse square for him. He could come back as a banana slug, and he would be more mobile and ambulatory than he is now.
He does say that he has lived with the threat of this reality for nearly half a century after being diagnosed with a debilitating motor neuron disease when he was 21. He said, I have lived with the prospect of an early death for the last 49 years.
No, you don't, no.
I'm not afraid of death. But
I think what you mean to say is that a prospect is hope. The sweet embrace of death cannot come fast enough for Stephen Hawking, I would imagine. I would imagine he just sits there every night, leaves the door unlocked, just, you know, waits for the reaping.
Anyway, in a presentation at the Google Zeitgeist meeting in London on Monday, which asked the question, why are we here? Hawking discussed the quantum fluctuations in the very early universe to become the seeds in which everything we see in the universe grew. For Hawking, no omnipresent creator is needed to form the universe we live in. There is no why. We are here through chance, he says, and nothing more. He told The Guardian, science predicts that many different kinds of universe will be spontaneously created out of nothing. It is a matter of chance, which we're in. I'm trying to look for something that's a little bit more upbeat after that.
It doesn't matter to me. You know what? I can stand, I can sit, I can run, I can jog. It's fine. I'm dandy.
Men who drink a lot of coffee over a long period of time may reduce their risk of the aggressive forms of prostate cancer, U.S. researchers say. SETI co-author Lorelei Mucci, an associate professor of epidemiology at the Harvard School of Public Health in Boston, said men who drink 1 to 3 cups of coffee per day lowered their risk of prostate cancer by 13%. The study is published in the Journal of the National Cancer Institute and found men who drink 6 or more cups of coffee per day over some 20 years were 60% less likely to develop the more aggressive forms of prostate cancer. It made no difference if the men drank caffeinated or decaffeinated coffee. Mucci said the researchers are not exactly sure why coffee may be beneficial to men when it comes to prostate cancer, but other studies have shown coffee is one of the strongest antioxidants.
It is a miracle drug, Dawn. It's life in a cup is what it is.
It keeps me alive, let me tell you. Flame retardant chemicals appeared in the majority of baby products that scientists tested in a recent study, including car seats, nursing pillows, changing pads, baby carriers, and rocking chairs. Of the numerous chemicals identified in the study, some are classified as probable carcinogens. Some are known to disrupt hormonal systems, and some have been linked to brain damage. The researchers were particularly surprised to detect one chemical that they thought had been phased out years ago. The study was not able to quantify the health risks of baby products that are treated with chemicals. Still, the findings are worrisome enough that it's worth seeking out alternatives, said lead researcher Heather Stapleton, an environmental chemist. As the mother of a 2-year-old and a 2-week-old, she said she takes great care to limit exposure to flame, limit explosions.
I swear to God, I thought you were going to say limit explosions.
Explosions of her children. We're hoping to raise awareness about whether these products are fire hazards in the first place, whether they require chemicals to be there if they are, and if they can be treated in other ways. Flammability practices around the U.S. are heavily influenced by California standards, which require that polyurethane foam in upholstered furniture be able to withstand exposure to a small open flame for 12 seconds. The easiest and cheapest way to meet that standard is to add chemicals to the foam.
You know, here's back on the coffee thing for a second, because several people have put this up. This is exactly what I was going to say, but I'll just read. Somebody says, WTF, I thought they said drinking coffee increased the risk of prostate cancer. F these guys. Which is exactly what I was going to say, because I remember them saying it a couple of years ago, that drinking coffee, especially decaffeinated coffee, increased your cancer risk because the acids that they used and the bleaching process they used to decaffeinate coffee beans then led to, you know, what do you call them? Fistfuls of tumors the size of basketballs.
Yeah. So, apparently not so much.
I think they're just making stuff up.
Yes. Yes, they are.
followed by the message, scientists be lying and pissing me off.
Well, remember when our cell phones were giving us all brain cancer?
Well, that's the thing. But at least they haven't said, like, it cures cancer, which is what the coffee story is saying. The coffee story isn't like...
Not yet.
The coffee story is not only just not saying... It's not just saying it doesn't give you cancer. It's saying it actually prevents cancer. If they were to come out tomorrow and say, cell phones prevent you from getting cancer in your head, you would say, well, that's a bunch of crap. Because you've been saying exactly the opposite for years on end.
I'll bet you anything, though, that Apple has guys doing research to try and prove that using an iPhone will cure cancer.
Well, but that's true, Dawn. They don't have to. That's not a matter of proof. That's just a matter of scientific record, I think.
Netflix streaming movies now fill more of the U.S.'s internet tubes than any other service, including peer-to-peer file sharing, which long held the top spot. This means for the first time in perhaps the internet's history, the largest percentage of the net's traffic is content that's paid for. Netflix accounts for 22.2% of all U.S. broadband traffic, compared to BitTorrent's 21.6% share. And at peak times, Netflix hits 30% of all traffic, a bounce of 44% over results from the fall. Streaming real-time entertainment is also on the rise, including such things as the March Madness NCAA basketball tournament, the British Royal Wedding, and PGA golf tournaments. The increase in streaming media decreased the percentage of traffic headed to websites and social networking sites, but there's no evidence that the number of visits to those sites is down at all. The two things to take away from this, possibly, are that, one, internet traffic is cheap. A Netflix streaming-only all-you-can-watch monthly subscription costs just $9. Serving up a movie likely costs Netflix somewhere between 2 cents and a dime. It's the licensing of the content that's actually expensive. Secondly, peer-to-peer file sharing, a large proportion of which is people trading copyrighted files, isn't going anywhere.
That's not true, Dawn. It's all for open-source software and albums that they're giving away to try to increase their merch sales.
Oh, yeah. That's all I ever do with it.
That's all that anybody uses it for. Just ask college students. They'll tell you.
That is not going to decline significantly until Hollywood makes more of its back catalog and new releases available for rental and online streaming.
This is one of those things where it's not even a meme. It's just a thing that people have been saying for several years now, which is that nobody will pay for content, which is just not true, which is just flat out false.
No.
It's not even true when they say, well, you know, they won't pay for content that's free elsewhere. That's also not true, because any of the stuff you're streaming on Netflix, you could get from a torrent site.
Yeah.
So I don't know where we got off into this, because you see this phrase used constantly online by people who I think don't ever actually use the internet, when they say, well, nobody pays for content anymore, which is just fundamentally absurd. That is the case if you have never heard of Netflix or what's that thing? iTunes.
Yeah.
So it just doesn't, I don't understand. I don't know where that idea came from, how it came to be interjected. Like, you can understand where messages about paid content would enter the cultural conversation, because those are injected there by marketers and by advertising. I don't know what meeting we were all at where we were issued this memo saying that nobody pays for content on the net.
I'm not sure either, because, I know that a lot of newspapers and magazines trying to do online subscriptions have had a bit of a hard time of it.
Yeah, but this last Christmas, more books were sold for the Kindle and the Nook than were sold in paper versions.
And again, you know, people will pay $5, $8, $10 for an app to read something online as well. So that's all the science.
Everybody else is foolish, Dawn. We are the lone bastion of sanity left in this world.
I've always thought so.
All right, there you go. There's your Science on the March, brought to you by Squires Electric. You can find them at squireselectric.com. They do, and here's the thing, they actually do tube repair and installation. So if your tubes...
You can find them online.
It's like a Mobius strip of convenience is what it is. So you can contact Squires Electric at facebook.com/SquiresElectric or SquiresElectric.com. You can also call them if you like. That is 503-252-1609. We talk about lately it's just them coming and dealing with snakes in your basement or spider covered panel boxes or something. But if you need to have the broadband installed, if you're working, if you're going to be working from home, you're moving your business into your home, or you're going to be consolidating or perhaps expanding your business, you want to make sure it's all taken care of. You contact Squires Electric at 503-252-1609. They are the proud sponsors of Science on the March. Here is Dawn Taylor.
An Oregon man who describes himself as the nation's largest broker of licenses for medical marijuana has pleaded guilty to reduced tax evasion charges. Paul Stanford, the 50-year-old founder of the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, was charged in March with failing to file personal income taxes in 2008 and 2009. Paying taxes is not optional, said Oregon's Attorney General John Kroger. Stanford has asserted that he would be cleared of guilt, but tells the Associated Press he instead took a sweetheart deal from prosecutors and accepted a misdemeanor charge of personal income tax evasion. Stanford was sentenced to 18 months of probation and 160 hours of community service. The organization, founded in 1999, operates offices in 9 states. It's helped more than 100,000 patients obtain state permits for medical marijuana. It lost its federal tax exempt status last year.
You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm, available later on the day via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here or at legionofnews.com. Next hour at RickEmersonShow.com, Cannibal Watch, Clergy Watch, Corpse Watch. We will talk to Aaron Mesh from Willamette Week. And wait. And today we welcome brand new subscriber. I've deleted it. Hold on a second. It's, wait. I had their name in front of me. Today we welcome brand new subscriber Amy. It's going to be listening to the program. Also, Amy and Jacob as well. Sorry.
Oh.
So Amy and Jacob join the... They're held close to the bosom of the Rick Emerson program. It sort of is a collective. It's kind of a binary bosom.
It's not a family so much as it's kind of cult-like, really.
It's a thing. It's a I was trying to do like a Voltron thing just now. Like an assemblage. It's a... We'll get back to you. Yeah, it's a thing. It's a thing, but now Jacob and Amy are part of it. So later on when it has a name, they'll be sort of grandfathered in. They'll be under its aegis once it's identified and quantified. You too can subscribe at the low cost of just 32 cents a day. Don't forget your first week is free. So if you get like halfway through that and just think, God, these guys are jackasses who just make crap up and talk about, you know, and it's always penis this and vagina that, and it's always blood this and nail gun that and goat this and cheese that. If you decide it's maybe not to your taste, it's hard to imagine how that could be the case. But if that does turn out to be the fact, you can you listen for the first week and then have no obligation after that. No salesman will call. Maybe. So that's RickEmersonShow.com, where we welcome our brand new subscribers, Amy and Jacob, today here is Don Taylor.
A Yale fraternity with famous alumni that include five U.S. presidents is now banned from the university. Delta Kappa Epsilon came under fire last fall after some frat members made sexually explicit comments in front of women on campus. In a now infamous video, pledges of Delta Kappa Epsilon walked through campus chanting sexist remarks at women and outraged many on campus, including the members of the Yale Women's Center, who accused the frat of advocating rape and violence against women. It doesn't actually
who
say
advocates rape against who? What campus is this?
This is Yale.
Is there a pro rape club there that I'm not? Is that like when you like when crew is off season, you go to the Raping Society?
Well, among
if you can't get into the Portcullis group or whatever the hell it is.
Among the things they were chanting as they were walking around campus was no means yes, and yes means effing.
Okay.
But yes.
That's half true, though.
Yeah, that is half true. But the whole... were chanting no means yes at women.
Which is not always true. It's only sometimes true. So I would say that they are perhaps 25% inaccurate.
So students are reacting to Yale's decision to ban DKE recruiting.
You probably said that you would never make out with your uncle. Did you make out with your uncle? No, Mom, I would never do that. No means yes there, Don. Let's be honest.
The school's investigation found the fraternity had threatened and intimidated others, stemming from a video taken last October of DKE pledges marching blindfolded and shouting vulgar comments in an area of campus where many freshman women live. The statement from the Yale College Dean says the school also issued penalties to individual fraternity members, but these punishments are confidential. Chapter leaders have apologized. One student talked to the school said the school sanctions are an overreaction, but that the punishment doesn't fit the crime. Yale says the discipline was necessary to ensure an educational environment free from harassment and intimidation.
Do they know that the female protesters wouldn't be so uptight if they had a little honey in the hives?
Well, that's,
yeah.
That's just a given.
Okay. Apparently, somebody... I shouldn't read this. Somebody has noted that... This is not me, by the way. I'm just reading. I'm just a conduit. I'm just passing this along. No means yes. Yes means anal.
Okay.
I'm unclear about whether they were actually chanting that or whether that's just somebody's attempted to marry Jape. It's entirely possible that they were. They were probably chanting just that. They sound like. Yeah. I mean, they do sound like sophisticates. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah. Mexican authorities say they found and detained more than 500 illegal immigrants from Central America and Asia who were crammed inside two tractor trailers heading towards the United States on Tuesday. To repeat. 500 illegal immigrants inside two tractor trailers.
Well, look at it this way. No matter where you live after that, it's going to seem like a palace.
X-ray equipment detected the immigrants at checkpoints at the southern state of Chiapas.
Here's your problem. You're all full of immigrants.
The drivers of both trucks sped away after authorities ordered them to stop, but probably couldn't drive very fast because they each had 250 guys in the back. Police apprehended them nearby. Inside the tractor trailers, they found 513 people. From El Salvador, Ecuador, China, Japan, Guatemala, India, Nepal, Honduras, and the Dominican Republic. Each of them had paid $7,000 to travel to the United States. They had been traveling in inhumane conditions, Mexico's National Migration Institute said. Officials said the group was receiving food, shelter, and medical assistance while Mexican federal immigration authorities reached out to consulates and embassies to arrange their return to their home countries. A Salt Lake City woman has been charged with a third-degree felony for allegedly asking an undercover police officer to give her drugs in exchange for an Olive Garden salad in a to-go box. She stated that she wanted some cocaine, but she only had $2 and a salad.
How does the same person who's interested in cocaine even come into possession of a salad? Why would she even have that on her? Because clearly it's not like health isn't really job one or ten to her.
The 33-year-old woman approached the undercover officer who was working on the corner of 200 South and 300 West in Salt Lake. The woman was carrying a white food container and asked the undercover officer for $10 worth of cocaine. She stated she wanted some cocaine, but only had $2 in a salad.
That is just the most Salt Lake City way ever to buy some drugs, by the way, is offering to swap something from the Olive Garden for it.
She later told the officer she would return later with more money or some Olive Garden gift cards.
Not even breadsticks she offers. It's salad.
I'm wondering if maybe she worked at Olive Garden because she said she would come back with Olive Garden gift cards.
Yeah, it seems like she hadn't really thought this all the way through.
Yeah, she was searched and they found a glass pipe inside a cigarette pack in her pocket. She was charged with one count of attempted possession or use of a controlled substance, a third-degree felony, and possession of drug paraphernalia.
It makes you wonder if this had worked for her at some point in the past. You know, like if she'd like if she'd been swapping something from the spaghetti factory for huge bags of heroin or whatever, you know? Like your Mazithra cheese will get you some China White.
I know. What could you get for lasagna? That's what I want.
Yeah. Can we all agree, though, that the breadsticks at the Olive Garden are pretty, you know, those are really, if you could just isolate those and just have those, like if I could actually even just get those, just like a thing that just could be delivered to my home somehow, I'd be all for that. Because, you know, everything else that can sort of get bent.
Well, I've only been to the Olive Garden a couple of times, but the food there is actually pretty tasty. It's just that you're surrounded, you know, by families with children running around, and then the waiters, like, just hunker down at the table and try to be overly friendly, and they always try to upset sell you on the wine.
Yeah, the thing about, well, because I would imagine depending on who you're there with, and if you're just one of those like zombified suburban dads where you're just sitting there just looking at your, you know, your wife in her Tigger shirt and your 15 fat kids and you're just going, ah, more Cabernet over here, please. If you can just leave the bottle, just, or just whatever, you know, like whatever, like what the wine that comes out of a tap, they just run it directly to your table.
But they're like the lowest rent of like car stereo salesmen. No matter what glass of wine you order, they're like, well, you know, we've got an actually something that's better than that.
For a dollar more?
For a dollar more. And it's like, come on.
My whole thing is that the Olive Garden never just, and it's not like I have a problem with chain restaurants. They never made a pasta that they didn't like to cook into liquid.
Well, yeah.
I mean, everything there has like, what is it called when it's firm?
Al dente.
Is it dente? Theirs is just sort of an Elmer's glue kind of hold on, let me get you some rigatoni. It's like everything just came out of a Play-Doh extruding machine in the kitchen.
On the other hand, though, if you want like a piece of chicken or something that's covered in some kind of delicious sauce that is nothing but cheese and fat, that is the place to go.
Well, fair enough. By the way, apparently that was the actual Yale chant. So that was actually not a cunning bit of satire on the part of one of our listeners attempting to impersonate a boneheaded Yale guy.
They were chanting, no means yes, yes means anal.
Yes, and Seamus notes that Yale has no appreciation of satire. I'm sorry, just one more comment.
Oh, okay.
Says, how ugly do you have to be that people would rather have Olive Garden salads in exchange for drugs rather than, you know, given a Hummer? That's a good point, actually. I mean, really, what is it? It doesn't speak well for...
Well, maybe she didn't have the time.
Or maybe
she was in a hurry.
Maybe she draws some sort of line of morality there. That, you know, maybe that's her upsell. You know, like if you give me, like, you know, like if you...
$20 worth, then...
Yeah, I mean, if it's just, you know, like if it's not a thing or like you're getting a quarter, but you're only giving me an eighth. You know, because that's, you know, you're going to save that for this. But it's like giving the prize with the Cracker Jacks. You got to wait for the full prize for that.
Okay. A father of two died from an extremely rare reaction to a dog bite after he was nipped by the family pet while on a camping holiday. Damien Holden was with his pregnant wife and son Sam when he was bitten on the hand by his Weimaraner?
Sure.
His Weimaraner, Eric, while trying to put up a tent.
Eric?
Yeah, the dog's name is Eric.
Okay, that's pretty great, actually. Yeah. I love the idea of a dog named Eric. I don't know why. There's something really funny about that.
This is also another story from Wales, by the way.
Of course.
So, the small wound was cleaned, and the family thought no more of the incident, but the 35-year-old became increasingly feverish over the next few days. What began next was a long battle for his life. He was taken to the intensive care unit at Leighton Hospital in Crewe, Cheshire, but died in September 2009, 3 months after the original incident. Tests revealed that Mr. Holden died of sepsis and multiple organ failure caused by the dog bite. An inquest found that he suffered a rare inflammatory reaction to a virus in the dog's saliva. The doctor, who was a consultant at the hospital, said 4 of 5 systems in his body were failing. When you get to that level of support, everything is a risk and the prospect of survival gets less and less. It was an incurable condition caused by a dog bite. The coroner recorded the verdict of accidental death and said, "This was an unusual case. It is bizarre to look at the intention of a dog, but I'm satisfied that Eric did not have any malicious intent.
Excellent.
Poor Eric. Let's do entertainment.
Here's your entertainment news for, the hell is this, Wednesday?
Yes.
Is it still Wednesday?
This has been the longest week.
You're
ever.
Sure about that?
Yes.
All right. What did Christy Turnquist made some observation about that yesterday on Twitter? That like, there's no rational way in which this can still, you know, just be Tuesday. I think she said yesterday
yes.
afternoon. Here's your entertainment news for Wednesday, May 18th, 2011. Here's Don Taylor.
Zsa Gabor has been rushed to the hospital again, following a problem with her feeding tube that was inserted into her stomach, and they said the feeding tube was, quote, bleeding like a fountain.
I don't... Could have just kept her as a centerpiece for your next dinner.
Her husband was worried and hoped she wasn't dying in front of his eyes, said spokesman John Blanchette. That's how scared he was.
If you're bleeding like a fountain from anywhere, especially from a feeding tube, which implies that you're not, like, in the best of health to begin with.
Well, so far she's had...
How is it that she's
so
not...
So far she's had hip replacement surgery and a leg amputation. So... You know, and now she was bleeding like a fountain from her feeding tube and had another surgery to fix that.
Bleeding like a fountain is, okay, I don't even know how to, and the fact that it's, and the fact that it's Zsa Gabor, and the fact that they'd taken her home because, weren't we just, didn't we just think she was dead?
You kept insisting she was actually dead, that they kept saying she's in the hospital, and you know, that's because she's already dead. But no. No, she's hanging in there.
Are they taking on some Robo Gabor, and like Robo Gabor has sprung a fluid leak of some kind, and they gotta, you know, quick get Robo Gabor back to the hospital. It's just lubricant, like just number 9 oil just spraying everywhere,
and her head's just spinning around.
I don't understand. How would you bleed from your feeding tube,
like a fountain?
Anyway, especially when you consider the fact that the feeding tube isn't. It's going into your mouth, but it's hooked up to, like, a machine full of food. So how would you be bleeding from a feeding tube?
Well, it could go down your throat, and it could tear something, and the blood would be coming back up the tube out your mouth.
Well, that's not really from the... When they say bleeding
from the
feeding...
tube isn't always connected to the food.
No, when they say bleeding from the feeding tube, do they mean out of or because of? Which from...
Both, really.
It seems like it might be the latter more than the former. I was imagining that the tube was sort of like, it was like one of those water willy things you play with when you're a kid on the lawn where you plug it into the hose and it goes, and the tentacles flail around.
And I think that's what they were saying,
like she's
yes.
some sort of a bloody rainbird.
It was just spurting out of the end of her feeding tube.
We're horrible people, but these are the things that I wonder about. It hadn't occurred to me that it was from damage from the feeding tube.
She was like a human slip and slide.
That's what I was thinking right there, that she was using it as a sort of, a projectile aid.
Yes.
Probably not.
Actor Kelsey Grammer's...
Also, doesn't that imply that the blood is, like, rushing out of her at, like, Vesuvius velocity? I mean, that, like, basically, yeah. Are Jews trying to escape from Egypt through her? I mean, and it's just suddenly just the Red Sea's...
Well, there are many kinds of fountains. It could be like one of those little Zen fountains that sits in the corner of your therapist's office. It could have just been bubbling out of it nonstop in a calming manner.
A Japanese rock garden was flying out of her mouth. Doctors were horrified.
But strangely calm.
Okay.
Actor Kelsey Grammer's disputes with ex-wife Camille Grammer are not over as he filed legal papers requesting sole custody of their two children. Kelsey Grammer currently lives in Chicago with his fourth wife, Katie Walsh, and Camille lives in Los Angeles. A hearing is set for June 27th. Actor Leonardo DiCaprio, who recently split with supermodel Bar Raffaelli, has been linked to Gossip Girl star Blake Lively. DiCaprio and Lively were spotted at the Hotel du Cap Eden Rock last week. She was wearing white and he was in a baseball cap, said a source. They walked around the grounds together. It looked like they were a couple. Meanwhile, People.com reports that Gossip Girl actress Leighton Meester is dating Drew Barrymore's ex-boyfriend Justin Long. Honestly, it sounds like she has much better taste.
Yeah.
Meester, who split with actor Sebastian Stan last year, was last seen last weekend in Los Angeles with Long at the French bistro La Poubelle. They were happily willing to talk to fans who approached them, said a source to the site. I don't care about any of this. Woody Allen, whose new film Midnight in Paris opens in select cities Friday, is returning to Broadway this fall as his play Relatively Speaking will be directed by John Turturro. The play, which will also be featured with one acts from directors Ethan Coen and Elaine May, will debut in October. The CW has renewed One Tree Hill and Nikita for another season. However, Hellcats was canceled.
Really? That's not right. It's an unfair world.
One Tree Hill and Nikita come back?
Well, Nikita's not a bad show.
Never seen it, but Hellcats.
Hellcats is a great show. I can't weigh in on One Tree Hill. I've never really watched that, but Nikita's fine. Hellcats was I only watched like maybe a third of the season, but I have to say that every time I watch it, I smiled and I laughed.
I have watched every episode of Hellcats.
It was legitimately enjoyable. I will say that.
I'm having problems with
Michelle Williams
tongue this morning. Michelle Williams has been offered the role of the Good Witch Glynn.
Fantastic.
Michelle Williams has been offered the role of the Good Witch Glinda in Oz, the Great and Powerful, which serves as a prequel to The Wizard of Oz. The story centers on a witch named Theodora, Mila Kunis, who falls in love with a salesman, James Franco. Rachel Weisz also stars as Evanora, Theodora's sibling, who has only evil intentions. LOL, spoiler. Cannes Festival organizers say they are disturbed by comments about Adolf Hitler made by Danish filmmaker Lars von Trier. They say von Trier has explained he allowed himself to be egged on by a provocation at a news conference, and he presents an apology. He was talking about his German heritage, and he launched into a rambling train of thought, starting with how he used to think he was a Jew and his disappointment when he learned he was not. I really wanted to be a Jew, he said, and then I found out that I was really a Nazi because, you know, my family was German, which also gave me some pleasure. What can I say? I understand Hitler, but I think he did some wrong things. Yes, absolutely. But I can see him sitting in his bunker in the end. He's not what you would call a good guy, but I understand much about him, and I sympathize with him a little bit. But come on, I'm not for the Second World War, and I'm not against Jews. I'm very much for Jews. Well, no, not too much, because Israel is a pain in the ass.
I experienced such a cavalcade and roller coaster of emotions going through that entire statement. He's the Dancer in the Dark guy, right?
Yeah.
So he's just kind of crazy, though. Isn't that his thing?
Yeah.
Isn't he's nutty? He's a nutty nut guy who's nuts?
Yeah, apparently the whole time he was talking, Kirsten Dunst, who is in his new movie, was sitting next to him, and she was like putting her hand on his arm, just like,
Ixnay.
Stop talking now.
Stop with the OJ.
Stop talking. And then later he said, he tried to get out of it by making some racy remarks about Dunst and Charlotte Gainsborough, her co-star, who was sitting there, and saying, oh yes, Kirsten loved being naked in my movie. She said she wants to be naked all the time. She insisted on being naked in the movie. And then he said something like, they both wanted to make another movie where they have lots of uncomfortable sex. And apparently the two women were just sort of giggling nervously, like, please stop talking, old man.
You're not fixing anything.
Yeah.
Somebody wants to know if your feeding tube is giving you linguistic troubles. Yes, but it has cut down on the spill factor.
It's gushing like a fountain, though.
Yes.
A burbling, relaxing fountain. We have time for...
We have time for like one more.
Okay, well, let's do a non-entertainment story because I wanted to share this one. A mother in Sandusky, Ohio, is facing charges accused of running over her 19-year-old daughter in a Walmart parking lot. Police say Michelle Tuma was fighting with her daughter Emily before the incident. Surveillance video shows the girl getting out of the car and hitting the hood. Then mom pulls forward, clipping the teenager. Officers say the mom claims she was going to drive by with her window down and smack her daughter in the head in retaliation for striking the vehicle. Instead, Michelle accidentally knocked Emily to the ground with the car, ran over the girl's foot, and then got out of the car. One mother on the street said, that's outrageous. That's your child. No matter what they did or said, you shouldn't hit them with your car.
All right, so let's just do that as the final. Yeah. We'll do that as the moral of today's program. What is the what have we learned today, Don?
No matter what your teenager does or says, you shouldn't hit them with your car.
There we go. On that note, we bring to a conclusion another exciting episode of Legion of News. Don't forget, you can get this program later on the day via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here or at legionofnews.com. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milkpacking District in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Eglin, chief of staff, Cheryl Kanakoa. After a brief musical interlude, we'll have today's installment of the Rick Emerson Radio Program at rickemersonshow.com. We will return again tomorrow, that is Thursday at noon. another episode of Legion of News. Thank you for listening. Have a safe and satisfying Wednesday, won't you?